This is what we do as artists, as musicians, visual artists, singers, painters. We provide the means by which people can develop a more nuanced understanding of all sorts of things, and in this case, our shared history.
At the behest of some of the Gunditjmara elders, initially to tell this story, Deborah has taken that request and had this amazing vision, and it is a deep listening experience for everybody, and country will hear us.
I would like this to be the vehicle for Australians to engage with some pretty hard-hitting details of our history together.
Daniel Browning with you for Away, Indigenous Culture on RN. In April 2014, a minibus set off from Haywood in southwestern Victoria, bound for Adelaide. A group of elders from Gunditjmara country were on their way to see an opera. Not just any opera, not sung in German or Italian, but in English. There were no elephants or feathers or courtly love. This was a story about a biblical exodus across the Murray River, in part reenacting historical events of 1939, when the Aboriginal residents of Cummeragunja Mission Station fled their homes in a protest over living and working conditions on the government reserve. And almost the entire cast of this contemporary opera, Pecan Summer, were Aboriginal people, including the librettist, composer, and soprano, Deborah Cheatham. Now, at a function on the opening night, Deborah was approached by one of those Gunditjmara elders from Haywood.
That's an important part of the story. The invitation from, I remember a conversation so clearly, Uncle Ken Saunders made the trip from Haywood across to Adelaide, to Kaurna country, and he came across to Kaurna country because we were performing Pecan Summer there. In fact, I think about 12 or 14 people got into a minibus, Budgebeam tours, and they went across to Adelaide to see Pecan Summer, and they were there for the opening night of our Adelaide season. And at the reception afterwards, he came up to me and said, "Right, I want you to write our story. I want you to write about the Umuralla Wars." Mm. And we met on several occasions after that. And he said to me at the time, I want it to be an opera. And I said, look, I think that we are going to reach so many more people if it's this other kind of work. Mm. So I don't mind if we call it an opera or we call it a war requiem or whatever we call it. But the most important thing was that we did honour to the story. Mm. All the layers of opera are there. So I hope that Uncle Ken feels that I've honoured that initial request, but I know that a piece that can travel without sets, you know, a piece that can travel in this chamber version will reach so many more people. And I would like this to be the vehicle for Australians to engage with some pretty hard-hitting details of our history together. You know, there's one line that the children sing. The English translation is, "We stood before the weapons." You know, the harsh reality that the children were on the front line of these battles as well. We stood before the weapons. Mm. It's going to challenge anyone who sings it, not merely coming to terms with a new language. You know what? That's the least of anyone's worries in a way. Classical musicians sing almost in exclusively in other languages. I was singing in Polish for 3 months at the beginning of this year. So, you know, that is something we're accustomed to approaching. So that's important. But the idea that here on Australian soil, here on this continent, wars were fought that we never talk about,
mm-hmm.
that on the front line of those wars, children were in the front line, really, not by choice of the Aboriginal people, but by ambush, by
murder.
Murder, that's what it was.
The story that Uncle Ken Saunders wanted told is traced along the Eumeralla, a river that courses over 78 kilometres in Victoria's Western District, emptying into Lake Yambuck, west of Port Fairy. This is Gunditj Mara country, beautiful country. Gunditj Mara country is a vast area. It includes the Budjbim cultural landscape, an ancient eel fishery and aquaculture system in the lava flow, tentatively listed for World Heritage Protection. There's Lake Conda with its permanent stone dwellings, and a massacre site known as Convincing Ground near Portland. In the 1830s and the 1840s, in a country of 100 frontiers, here was another. A conflict that raged for years. It's known as the Eumeralla War, after that river. And that tells you something. It's a war over land and the competition for resources. And the term Eumeralla War is not a conceit. It was the title of a chapter in the memoirs of a squatter and government official, Thomas Alexander Brown, later known better as the novelist Ralph Boldrewood. He wrote Robbery Under Arms. In 1841, Brown, a.k.a. Boldrewood, was present at the height of the conflict in this part of the Western District.
All the land that lay between Eumeralla proper and the sea, a tract of country of some 20 or 30 miles square, had been probably, from time immemorial, a great hunting ground and rendezvous for the surrounding tribes. It was no doubt eminently fitted for such a purpose. It swarmed with game, and in the spring was one immense preserve of every kind of wild fowl and wild animal that the country owned. Among the rocks, there were innumerable caves, depressions, and hiding places of all kinds, in which the natives had been used to find secure retreat and safe hiding in days gone by. Whether they could not bear to surrender to the white man these cherished solitudes, or whether it was the short-sighted childish anxiety to possess our goods and chattels, can hardly ever be told. Whatever the motive, it was sufficient, as on all sides at once came tales of wrongdoing and violence, of maimed and slaughtered stock, of homicide or murder.
Tensions ran high as the squatters expanded deeper into the bush, clearing the land and grazing their livestock in the rich pastures of the Western District. Naturally, the Gunditj Mara defended their country. We don't know for sure how many people died, but in the same way that Eumeralla was a secret war, peace too was never declared. Now, Deborah Cheatham is one of those artists who makes things happen. But even she reckons writing and composing a dense war requiem and then translating it with Gunditj Mara language custodian Vicky Cousins is one of the biggest challenges of her music career.
When I completed the score of Eumeralla, A War Requiem for Peace, I felt that it was something that I had been able to grow through. We should always grow through our arts practice as our lives. We need to grow at each opportunity, but particularly with this work, writing for this incredible language, when I looked at the score at the end, I could see that it was basically the same length as my opera, Pecan Summer, you know, 75 minutes of music. But it's so much more dense. And now that we're in the rehearsal phase, I'm really just finding this, you can luxuriate in it, but it really does challenge you.
And Vicky, I mean, this is also a huge undertaking for you. What did you think when your first approach, when Deborah made that first approach to you about, you know, kind of perhaps using your language in this kind of composition?
I was a resounding yes and absolutely, and I was so excited, and you know, seeing what a challenge it would be, but the whole story and what Deborah was trying to achieve in telling that story. So it was an absolute yes.
But, you know, Vicky, it's really interesting because when I asked you, I mean, I was obviously really conscious of the fact that this is someone else's story. Even though the resistance wars are a shared experience for many of the Aboriginal nations, I was really conscious of the fact that, wow, this is a big ask. You know, this is a language that you are so intimately connected to, and here I am, I'm going to set it to music. So when you said yes so quickly, I was, it really gave me the strength of conviction to know that I would be able to do it.
Well, you know, to be able to tell that story in our mother tongue, absolutely. I didn't realise just how much of a challenge, because I didn't really understand Requiem Masses and what I sort of did, but what they were.
Well, I probably left out the detail that there are 19 separate movements.
Yeah, but understanding that and the intent and then what your intention is with the work, which, you know, Chris Ira, the linguist and colleague and friend, really helped me to understand on all levels and supported me with the linguistics, because it was a major catalyst for creating new language, new grammar.
Yeah.
A whole lot of stuff, because we're in revitalization.
That's right. It's not just piecing back together the language, it is developing new language for a new century as well of experiences.
Yeah. And a new, like, well, when I say a new kind of work, a Requiem Mass, I mean, in our cultural mourning practices, we no doubt had some similar in its intent, but not in the same way, because it's, you know, from Catholicism and,
well, that's,
and Latin.
And that's right. And it's interesting you say that, Vicky, because when I first asked you, I think I was on a residency in Banff in Canada, and I'd gone away to look at what I would do with the English translation of the Requiem Mass as it currently exists, which is translated, of course, out of the Latin. And I knew that I was going to add some language to it because I knew it would need expanding. But there was this one pivotal moment. I arrived at the movement, which is the Agnus Dei. And the sentiment behind this in the traditional Mass for the Roman Catholic faith is Agnus Dei, that Jesus was the Lamb of God who was sacrificed in order to take away the sins of the world. And that was a turning point for me. I realised right then that, well, it was our ancestors who were sacrificed for those lambs, and that theology, as important as it is to the people who are part of that faith, it wasn't going to fit this situation. And that even though I could maybe use it as a kind of a structure, a framework, I was going to have to write a new text, and it's that you've translated so powerfully and so beautifully.
My understanding of what a Requiem Mass is and the meaning and intent in those different movements, and Chris helped me to understand the beauty of what Deborah's done with that structure in rewriting it and being able to tell our stories, our story specifically of Umarela War, but that resistance, because I have a personal in my practice and learning around burial and mourning practices and what that means. So this is, and for it to be a requiem for peace is awesome and amazing. So it evokes all of those things for me as a Gunditjmara person and, you know, a descendant of those old people who fought and died to defend our country, that healing, because mourning has to be a process of healing. We can't stay stuck in our mourning and grieving. We have to move through it for us, but for the non-Aboriginal people, and Deborah will talk about that in more detail in a minute, I hope, to so people can understand the beauty of what she's created here in that peace and seeking forgiveness. It's a healing for our mobs, a healing for country and our old people. So I can't even put into words what it means. It's such a profound thing. I've been doing this work for quite a while now in working in community, but looking at language, you know, revitalisation and all that that entails. So, and it's a gift and a journey I've carried on after my father established that for our Gunditjmara mobs back in the 1990s. And other people are also continuing that work. But I was excited by the challenge because of the work. At first I went into it going, right, now I've got to find these words and I'm going to have to do this process and I'll have to think about this. And then I also then realised I needed to actually understand the work, not just look at the words. And Deborah and I were talking just a little bit before about the translating literally from Latin to English to then a contemporary English and then into Deborah's new words that she wanted to write. And I do a similar thing. I look at the words, but then I look at the meanings, and then I have to look at that through that cultural lens. It's not just a relaxification thing. Oh, there's the word for good, so that's the word for good, because our language is our worldview. It you know, is that way we have of being and knowing and looking at the world. And you know, I couldn't have done that without Chris Ira.
Fabulous linguist.
Fabulous. Yeah. And a musician and composer.
And a musician, yeah.
And composer in her own right.
Can I give an example of, yeah, of the poetry of,
please,
your translation? So I've written, for instance, in the Recordare, which in my work is the ninth movement, it begins with remember, simply that word. But when Vicky and Chris translated that, remember wasn't simply a word, it was, we will not shut our ears. You know, yeah, it was about the process of remembering. Yes. How do you get to remember something? You need to listen. Mm. So that movement now becomes, the title of that movement becomes Panutikiwing, do not shut ears.
Yeah.
Mm. So there's this other depth of poetry that this has been the most amazing collaboration, because I've written this text and then Vicky and Chris have, you know, they've elevated it into another cultural context entirely, where some concepts in Gunditjmara nations, as you would well know, Daniel, in the Aboriginal nations and Torres Strait Islander nations, there are concepts that it's very difficult to fit them into or shoehorn them into the very small sort of Western doctrines, which are much younger than our own. So what has happened here is we've elevated that language to another point. It's been such, I'm smiling so much because, well, one, I'm relieved that I finished it and I basically have learned my part because I'm actually singing it as well, but also that this other this other beautiful poetry exists, and it's heightened my own understanding of myself as an Aboriginal person of this country.
This is Away on RN. Yumurrala, a war requiem for peace, remembers the pitched battles fought by the fighting Gunditj Mara to defend their land in southwestern Victoria. We'll never know the true loss of life on both sides of the conflict, which raged near the Yumurrala River from around 1834. I remember, Vicky, we were at the Hopkins River, at the falls, and you told me the name for that place, and I've recounted this story with you a number of times ever since. Yes. It had a big impact because the name for that place is, in Gunditj Mara, Tangan Punut?
Yeah.
Yep. Eels kiss the stones or eels,
eels bite the stones.
And yes, that's referring to those little glass eels who have to climb up the falls to get back to their home waters.
Yes, where their parents and grandparents come from, just like us.
Yeah, indeed. I'll never forget the poetry of that moment. Your language is very poetic.
Well, all our Aboriginal languages are, because like Deborah said, they're dealing with old and very deep concepts of connection and belonging in a way that English, it doesn't translate a lot. And so there was that double poetry, really. And again, I hark back to Chris educating me on the poetry of what Deborah had written and how she had done that in this Requiem Mass structure. And Chris came down to my place. I was living down on country at the time. And for 3 days, we didn't get out of our pyjamas. We just got up and, you know, walked around and made food and just went to this space, because Chris has the linguistic expertise that I have only part of, and I have that cultural knowledge of being able to interpret, I suppose, and redream and work out how do we say this, what does Deborah actually mean. We had to email and call a couple of times, what do you mean, I think, by the light, you know, so we had to clarify a couple of things. But what was the meaning and intent behind Deborah's words, and how does that then be re-dreamed, re-translated back into our mother tongue? And it was the most amazing experience for me too. And Chris coined the phrase of deep translation. So when we're talking now, we talk about that deep translation, which, you know, linguistics for her, Chris helps to a point, and then I go somewhere else. That you know, Chris can't go, and yeah, it's been amazing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing it because I haven't heard anyone performing it yet.
Oh, that's pretty exciting.
I'm about to, so yeah. I'm getting really excited.
That's going to be an amazing night, having you there. The first time we lifted off the page completely as an ensemble, we'll have three soloists, including Don Bemrose, a Goongari man who's worked with Short Black Opera since before there was a Short Black Opera, mezzo-soprano Linda Barkan, who's a very good friend that I've sung with for years and years, and someone that I would trust this with. You know, that was a really important part of this, knowing the people that you could entrust this to, this sort of sacred adventure that we're on to present this new work, as well as an incredible group of singers, the Consort of Melbourne. Well, the other big voice in it, of course, is Dungala Children's Choir, which is our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island Children's Choir. And the kids that will be singing the premiere on the 14th of October, which is on country down there in Port Ferry, those kids will be basically performing in sight of Dean Maar, which is a place of such deep cultural significance to the Gunditj Mara clans. Dungala Children's Choir, you know, it's mainly made up of kids from Victorian nations at the moment. They're going to respectfully go down to that country and sing in a language that is so formed now through this process that Vicky and Chris and the other people who've been working hard on languages have contributed, that is going to empower them in a way that we could never have imagined, that they would never have the opportunity to sing so much of one language here in the southeast. It's not an experience they ever get.
Nobody really, like most of us wouldn't have that opportunity.
They sing a word repeatedly in this work pretty much any time Malingpa appears, which means tomorrow. DCC or Dungala Children's Choir sing that. And yesterday we had a six-hour rehearsal with them. They're such troopers. And I said, did you notice that you sing Malingpa a lot? And they said, yeah, why are we singing Malingpa all the time? I said, because you are tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're my tomorrow. And you give me great confidence in tomorrow because of who you are as a young person. And they all smile and get all proud and sing it a bit louder the next time. And they're just a beautiful group of kids. They're a reason for getting up in the morning. You know, but they do sing that word Malingpa quite a lot. This version of Umarela, A War Requiem for Peace, it's basically for smaller forces. Now, when I say that, there still will be 45 people on stage, so if you call that small. But it's the instrumental ensemble is a septet called Plexus, and they're a Melbourne-based group. And there are seven instruments in that, of course. So this version of the work is a very intimate one. In classical music, we call that a chamber ensemble. It's a smaller ensemble. However, next year in June for Education Week in Melbourne, the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra will premiere the symphonic version of this work.
So from 45 in the chamber to the symphonic, how many would you expect with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra? What's the number there, like 100?
More like 120.
Wow.
Wow, yeah.
So that's when it gets really loud.
Yeah.
Really, really loud. And it's interesting because, you know, in this work, even with the 12 voices of the Consort of Melbourne, the 25 voices of Dungala Children's Choir, the soloists, the three soloists and the instruments, we can get pretty loud. I know from experience, of Pecan Summer, which I had to premiere Pecan Summer on country. And you were there, Daniel. You remember on country in Maroopna there, less than a kilometre from where the events of Pekan Summer actually took place in 1939, the walk-off from Kumbrungunja Mission Station. Performing that on country to that audience, we've never equaled that experience, I tell you. There's nothing to compare to it. There have been other wonderful performances, exciting. We went to the Sydney Opera House. That was phenomenal and an important milestone. But that on-country premiere, that will be unique and it won't be replicated anywhere else.
You know, we've talked about so many layers of what's happening here in this collaboration, the learnings that each of us and everyone involved are experiencing. But the purpose and intent behind Deborah's vision, at the behest of some of the Gunditjmara elders initially to write, tell this story,
yeah.
Deborah has taken that request and had this amazing vision, and the purpose and intent underlying that Deborah just revealed in those words there, where is that treaty for peace? And perhaps this is it. And it is a deep listening experience for everybody, and the country will hear us.
It's really important that you have the people that you can trust in this space for the telling of the story. And it is an important story. And, you know, for that reason, you may not want to include this comment, Daniel, because it sounds a bit like I'm blowing smoke in your direction. But we began our first discussion together on Away, because this is the rightful place to begin this discussion. And I know that we'll have many more interviews in the media, but this is a space where the necessary and pre-existing knowledge of what we're talking about resides already. We're not having to convince anyone.
No.
We're on the same page. And you know what? There are a lot of people in Australia who are they're not on the same page. They're not even in the same library, you know. They're not reading from the same book as we are. They don't have the knowledge yet. I'm just hoping that by offering audiences the opportunity to sit in a theatre or a concert hall and hear this story and to read the translation and for them to go away and think about it in their own time, that will be a less threatening process. Now, I don't know. Some days I wonder whether there are some people, do they deserve to have a less threatening process? But in the end, I know we're going to get further if people can arrive at this understanding in a peaceful and non-confrontational way. Some people will just, they will need that. And music provides that space.
Thank you.
the soprano Deborah Cheatham and Gunditjmara language custodian Vicky Cousins, talking about their incredible collaboration on Umarella, A War Requiem for Peace. Now, the premiere of this new work takes place on country at the Port Fairy Spring Music Festival on Sunday, the 14th of October. More details on our website. Next year, the full symphonic version with the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra will echo through Hamer Hall.